Okay, 17B1. 17B1. Now we begin on 17B with a recapitulation of a small piece of the Mishnah, which reads, V'hanazir v'hamitzora mitumato letorato. This is on the left side of 17B1. It's near the top of the page. Okay, it's about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines down from the top of the page. V'hanazir v'hamitzora mitumato letorato. Now, let's recall what that is. That's a quote from the Mishnah that we read the first week of this class. So we have to recall it a little bit. It's on page 14A1. It was the page before 13B. Remember, the subject of the entire chapter is Elu Megalchim B'Moed. These are the people who are permitted to cut their hair on the Moed. On the Moed. Moed meaning the Chol HaMoed, the intermediate days of the festival. And so we saw a list of them. They were Haba Mimidinat Hayam, the person who came from abroad. Umi Beit HaShivya, who was let out of jail. Well, no, Beit HaShivya means out of captivity. You shouldn't say jail, because that's later. V'hayotzei mi Beit HaAsirin, that's out of jail. Person who comes out of jail. And the person under a ban who was freed from it by the sages. Similarly, somebody who has taken a vow and asks for absolution from the vow, from the sage, and he is freed from that vow. And in the last piece, V'hanazir v'hamitzora mitumato letorato. And the Nazir, the Nazirite, who ends up completing his period of Nazirateship, okay, when he cannot cut his hair, and it ends up that completion is during Chol HaMoed. All right, that's the Nazirite, the Mitzora, simply somebody who has recovered from the skin condition of Tzara'at, leprosy or whatever it is, and that period of time also falls in the middle of the Moed, because these people couldn't do it before the Moed. Okay, they couldn't do it before. They were prohibited to cut their hair. Suddenly it's Chol HaMoed, and then they could do it. So, Nazir Mitzora mitumato letorato. The one who goes from being in a condition of Tum'ah, ritual tum'ah, impurity, and then he is, at the conclusion of that, required to cut the hair. Okay, that's the particular case of the Nazir here, actually. The Nazir was somebody who, both the Nazir and the, this is an issue in the commentators, but I think what is really going on here is that it's both the Mitzora and the Nazir. Both of them are considered to be in a state of ritual impurity, in the following way. The Mitzora, obviously, because Tzara does that to you. The Nazir, the problem with the Nazir is the Nazir is not allowed to have contact with a dead body. Okay? If suddenly somebody drops dead in front of a Nazir, okay, that makes him Tameh. He becomes ritually impure. Right? It's not anything that he asked for. He didn't do it of his own free will. Suddenly it happens. Then he has to go through a variety of things, including a certain sacrifice that he has to bring. Okay, so all of that can happen, and the timing is a fixed timing. It can result, therefore, that it's just the middle of the Moed where this is actually going to happen. Okay, so these are the people. That is what we are now quoting. So, to a greater or lesser extent, our Gemara is going to be picking up from this little piece, HaNazir v'hamitzora mitumato letorato. Okay? Any questions? Good so far. Okay. Now the Gemara begins as follows. This is 17b1, toward the bottom of the left-hand column above the line. Da'amine Rabbi Yirmiya mi Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Yirmiya asks Rabbi Zera the following question. Bishalo ayalahem penai. When the Mishnah says that a person is allowed to cut his hair on Chol HaMoed, do we assume that this refers to a case b'shelo haya lahem p'nai, when they had no time? They had no time before the Moed to actually do this, right? And since they had no time, that's the only time they could do it, okay? Oh, dil ma'af k'sheya lahem p'nai. He raises another possibility. Maybe even when they do have the time, that is to say, when they would perhaps be able to do it. Okay? It could be that they're in some sort of special category. That there's something about them. And you know, even if it doesn't seem logical just off the top of your head, the Gemara will frequently raise possibilities that don't seem logical frequently off the top of your head. It's not at all unusual. And once you get started going in this direction, sometimes you never know where you're going to end up. It's usually not where you thought you were going. That's the whole way that the Gemara works. It tries to surprise you. Okay, so the Rami Yirmiya was the one who asks the question about this from Rabbi Zera. And Rabbi Zera then says, Amar lahem tanina. He has a baraita. And the Baraita explains the facts. Kol elu she'amru mutarin legalech b'moed. All those people that they said, meaning the sages said, are permitted to cut their hair on the moed. B'shelo aya lahem penai. This is only in the case where they were unable to cut their hair before the festival. But if they did have time beforehand, then they're not allowed to cut their hair. Nazir umitzora. Af al pi shahayalahem pnai mutarim. Aha. First, it says all of the categories, and I would have thought that it was including the Nazir and the Mitzara in this category, because people who have time ahead of time, before the Moed. But no, that's not the case. In fact, the Nazir and the Mitzara are a special case. Naziru Mitzara, afal pisha hayalehem pnai. Even though they had time before the Moed, Shelo Yashu Korbanotehem, in order to make sure that they do not delay the bringing of their sacrifices. Okay, let's describe what this is. A guy recovers from Tzarat. Right? He's got a fixed timetable. Once he gets into the recovery mode, certain things happen. He has to let 7 days go by. He's got to shave hair. He's got to let another period of time go. And all this is fixed once the Kohen has said, you're better. Now, keep in mind, too, that this process has nothing to do with the getting better. The getting better is separate. It's only once he's better that this process kicks in. Okay? So it all kicks in. Now let's say the timing is such that this guy's purification is finished and he can cut his hair right before the beginning of the Moed, before the beginning of the holiday. Dori, behind you is an English Bible. Could you bring me that Bible, please? So I just want to read you this because I think it will be helpful to read. Leviticus 14:8. Okay, this is the beginning of Parshat Metzora. Parshat Metzora. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, this shall be the ritual for a leper at the time that he has to be cleansed. When it has been reported to the priest shall go outside the camp. If the priest sees that the leper has been healed of his scaly affection, the priest shall order two live clean birds, cedar wood, crimson stuff, and hyssop, to be brought for him who is to be cleansed. The priest shall order one of the birds slaughtered over fresh water in an earthen vessel. And he shall take the live bird along with the cedar wood, the crimson stuff, and the hyssop, and dip them together with the live bird in the blood of the bird that was slaughtered over the fresh water. He shall then sprinkle it seven times on him who is about to be cleansed of the eruption and cleanse him. And he shall let the live bird free in the open country. So far, so good. You got that? It's a little weird, but so it is. What can I say? Okay. The one to be cleansed shall wash his clothes, shave off his hair. Shave off his hair. Okay? Shave off his hair. And bathe in water, and then he shall be clean. Okay, so that's what we mean by the hair cutting. And we understand this to mean if this period, so first there are these two sacrifices, one is the bird with the blood, and the other they let go. Okay, then they shave the guy's hair. So it's effectively a hair cutting. So if that were to occur, we always assume that this was talking about in the middle of the Moed. Because before that time, he obviously couldn't do it. But no. The Baraita says, even if this occurs before the Moed, even if it occurs before Yom Tov, that this guy has to go through the first part of the ceremony, the two birds, then the hair cutting. Right? Even if that occurs, let's say this whole thing is the Moed start, or Yom Tov starts on a Friday. Okay, this guy's hair is cut on a Thursday. Right? So why can't he? You know, that just seems fine. Well, the one to be cleansed shall wash his clothes, shave off all his hair, and bathe in water, then he shall be clean. After that, he may enter the camp. But he must remain outside his tent 7 days. On the seventh day, he shall shave off all his hair. Psst. Another haircut. Another one that has to come now. Of head, beard, and eyebrows. When he has shaved off all his hair, he shall wash his clothes and bathe his body in water, then he shall be clean. On the eighth day, he shall take two male lambs without blemish, one ewe lamb in its first year without blemish, 3/10 of a measure of choice flour with oil mixed in for a meal offering, and one log of oil. And these shall be presented before the Lord when the man is to be cleansed at the entrance of the tent of meeting by the priest who performs the cleansing. Okay. Now, let's say this second haircut. Right? He's got to go through two cuttings here. Let's say the second one is supposed to fall Thursday and Yom Tov begins Friday. Okay? This guy, he was Michutz La'olo, he was outside of his tent for a long time. Who's in his tent? His wife is in his tent. He didn't see her and didn't have a chance to talk about the children. A lot is going on. She had to be home. He was away. It's Erev Yontif. She's cooking. Okay? So there's a lot going on. What happens? He forgets to cut his hair. Right? He was supposed to cut his hair, but he didn't do it. So you would say, well, he could have done it. We just learned from the Baraita that if you could do it before the Moed, you're supposed to do it before the Moed. So why don't we penalize this guy the way we penalize everybody else? Since he could do it, just the way you and I could do it before the Moed. And if we don't do it, what do the rabbis do? They penalize us. And they say, you're going to be a mess the whole Moed. And next time the Moed comes around, you're not going to forget. Right, that's very effective. We already read that and we thought that was good psychology. Okay? So why not for this guy? Why not for this same guy? He should be penalized as well. No, the Baraita says that he's an exception. And the reason that he is an exception is because after he does the haircutting, right, shaved off all his hair, he washed his clothes, bathed his body in water, he shall be clean. Okay? That's on the seventh day of this process now. On the eighth day, he shall take two lambs without blemish. He still has to bring korbanot, sacrifices. He still has to bring sacrifices. And in fact, if he doesn't bring the sacrifice, the Torah commands him to bring it when? On the eighth day. The Torah says he has to do it like that. So if we were to penalize him and say, you can't do this, you can't cut your hair until after the Moed, you know what else he can't do? He can't bring his sacrifices. And the Torah says that he has to bring his sacrifices. So therefore, we make an exception. We make an exception. All the people mentioned in the Mishnah, with the exception of the Metzorah, and likewise the same reasoning, that it's different sacrifices, but it's the same basic concept that functions also with the Nazir, who is going from Tumato to Taharato, the Nazir who is becoming purified from that contact with death. He also has a haircutting, but the haircutting is not the end of the process. After the haircutting, he's got to bring a sacrifice. And it's the sacrifice that's crucial here. And that's what the Gemara means, Kedei shelo yashu korbanotayim, so that they do not delay bringing their offerings. Therefore, they are exceptions to all the other people who are mentioned in the Mishnah. Okay?
Why sacrifices more weight than just the process of shaving and other stuff?
Because he should have shaved.
No, but why the sacrifice itself has more weight? Because it's so important, we will allow you to shave later.
But we tell him he's got to shave himself. I'll give you a simple answer. Because remember that what we are saying now, when we're creating a penalty for the guy, that's a penalty created by the rabbis. Right? It's a penalty created by the rabbis. The rabbis cannot create a penalty which will have as its result the possibility that a law of the Torah wouldn't be observed. Okay? So that given the fact he's already done one wrong, we'll be forcing him by a rabbinic law to do two wrongs. We can't change the fact he already did one wrong because he already did it. Right? But we don't want to legislate to force him to do another wrong. That's the difference. Okay.
What happens if the shaving falls on a chag, on the actual holiday? Not
you
the
can't
holiday.
Do it. You can't do it. You can't do it then, because that in that circumstance you can't do it.
Okay. It's doubly lenient though, because the Torah says that the sacrifices are to be brought on the eighth day, and in this example, the shaving is not done on the seventh day, and the sacrifice is not done on the eighth day, but they're both permissibly done.
Correct. You're right. But you try to do them as soon as possible afterwards. Yeah. Exactly. But that's correct.
It's very flexible.
It is. There's a certain flexibility there. It's completely flexible, I wouldn't say, no, but it is somewhat flexible. Correct.
It's like how much do you inspect the chicken? I mean,
correct.
He's an idiot. So.
Better that he should do it sooner rather than later, right? We just surely don't want to force him to do it later. Okay? There we go. Okay, yes.
I'm just speculating, the special condition in which the Mitzvah and the Nazir are probably caused them not to have cut their hair for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
So it probably was longer or greater than the average person, therefore mm-hmm. the necessity of cleansing themselves
would be from more
unusual growth may have contributed.
It's good thought. It's not what the Talmud says, but it's a good sociological thought or psychological thought. Could be. Okay. All right, now all of this is really an introduction to get us back to the laws of mourning. This may not seem obvious, that we're dealing here with the korbanot of a metzora, but that's almost like morning. We're almost back home again. And that is the transition now, you'll see, to what's coming up. Because we are talking about cutting the hair. And cutting the hair now in all of its glory and details will be a major subject that will provide the structure for what we're now going to read. Tanna. Again, we have now a baraita. A baraita. Hakohen v'ha'avel mutarim begiluach. The Kohen and the mourner are permitted to cut their hair, assumedly, on Chol HaMoed. Now, this is important because, realize, our Mishnah didn't say that. Our Mishnah taught us a whole variety of people who are permitted to cut their hair on Chol HaMoed. Nowhere did you see mention of a mourner. We did not mention a Kohen. And a Kohen, we'll see what the issue with a Kohen is in a minute. Okay? Those were not included in the Mishnah. So the Baraita now comes and gives us two additional categories of people who, because of whatever issues are involved, this group of people is not allowed to cut their hair. And then a point comes and they are allowed to cut their hair. Okay? Now, let's see. Let's take a look at both these cases. The first case is the Kohen, who is not allowed to cut his hair. Actually, we mentioned that way, way back. I think it was on 14a, if I remember correctly. 14a. 14a. Let's see if I'm correct here. Right near the beginning. Turn back to 14a1. It's actually the second paragraph of the Gemara on 14a1. Kiditnan, as we learned in the Mishnah, Anshe Mishmar, the Anshe Mamad, Asurim Lesaperu Lechabes. The men who are part of the Mishmar and those who are part of the Mamad are prohibited from cutting their hair or washing their clothes. If you remember this baraita, this was the baraita, you're wondering now, why is it that way? And this was the baraita that had behind it the reasoning, kedesha lo kikansu la'avodatam kesheim menuvalim, that they should not begin their tasks when they are a mess. So that we make sure that they don't do it during the time that they are serving. We force them to do it ahead of time because we don't allow them to do it. That then was the reasoning. The Gemara then said it is the same thing then for the other people mentioned in the Mishnah who are not allowed to, who are suddenly allowed to cut their hair on the Moed. Okay? Let's recall what at least the first category was, because it's that first category, Anshei HaMishmar, that we are now reading about here, because this is HaKohen. HaKohen ve'avel mutarim begiluach. The Kohen and the mourner are permitted to cut their hair on the Moed, on the Moed. Meaning, whatever it is that forbids them from doing it comes to a conclusion on the Moed. Now, what is the Kohen? The Kohen is a Kohen who is part of the Mishmar. Remember what that is? Remember that the land of Israel was divided into 24 districts. each district of the land was required to send Kohanim to the temple in Yerushalayim twice a year. Okay? You then made up for the other weeks of the year because there were other times that were sort of everybody would serve. We'll see mention made of that in our Gemara maybe tonight. The other time, when the times that everybody would serve were on the Moadim, on the festivals, everybody would serve. But if you are on the Mishmar, you're a Kohen, you come from Tzipori in the Galilee, and you go to Yerushalayim, you serve for 7 days, the Mishmar would change in the temple on Shabbat. It was on Shabbat that the Mishmar would change. Okay? So let's say Yom Tov came Wednesday of the week before. Right? Wednesday, Yom Tov comes Wednesday of the week before. You're not allowed to cut your hair because you're in the Mishmar. You're not allowed to do it. You get to the middle of Chol HaMoed, it's Saturday. Next day is Sunday, it's still Chol HaMoed. Alright? That's what the Baraita is referring to here. That guy couldn't cut his hair before the beginning of the holiday because he was a member of the Mishmar. He didn't choose that. It was just that was his assignment. You know, goes according to this district, that district, the other district. He happened to be a part of the people. And it's set Shabbat to Shabbat. So you never know when a Yom Tov is going to come. The Yom Tov can move around the whole week, nearly. Can come in any day, but it can come in a lot of the days of the week. So it could be the Yom Tov starts in the middle of the week. This guy is on his Mishmar because he starts on a Saturday. He finishes on a Saturday. It's over on the next Saturday. He finds himself on Sunday. It's Chol HaMoed. Right? That Kohen is allowed to get a haircut on the Sunday of Chol HaMoed. Right? He was also in a compromised condition the way the other people were as well. That's number one. Number two is the Avel. We'll see the Avel is somewhat complicated. But the Avel is the mourner. The Avel is the mourner. And you have to keep in mind here that the mourner is prohibited to cut hair. And frankly, this also applies to shaving, but cutting hair in particular. During not only a 7 day period, but a 30 day period. There are effectively two major periods of mourning and then a third. The first period of mourning is for 7 days. The second period of mourning is a 30 day period, which includes those 7 days. Okay? And then there is a yet longer period of mourning for a year. Okay? Now, the prohibition on getting the haircut extends throughout the 30 days, not just for the 7 days. Take a look at note number 14. Note number 14 is very good, it's very detailed. I want to read it. A mourner is prohibited to cut his hair during Shloshim, and a Kohen is prohibited to cut his hair during the week that his Mishmar serves in the temple. The Gemara will proceed to clarify the cases. Below, 15. Several words of introduction to the following Gemara are in order. In general, the mourning periods of Shiva and Shloshim are canceled whenever they are interrupted by a festival. Okay, this is what you have to keep in mind. If you are sitting Shiva and the festival comes, the festival hits you in the middle of your Shiva, what happens to the Shiva? It's canceled. It's canceled. Okay? What about the Shloshim? It's not canceled. What if the morning hits the festival, comes, and you're in Shloshim? Cancel Shloshim. Okay. If you're in Shloshim, it cancels Shloshim. If you're only in Shiva, it cancels Shiva, but not Shloshim. So it cancels whatever you're in the middle of. That's the power of the festival when it comes.
But when you cancel the Shiva, you don't cancel the Shloshim?
No.
I mean, that's not the built-in.
No, it's not built-in. No. No. Instead, if you've observed, let's say you've observed one day of Shiva, and the next day is Yom Kippur. Okay? Next day, you've observed one day of Shiva, and next day is Yom Kippur. How do you count the Shloshim? The day after Yom Kippur is what day of the Shloshim?
The seventh.
It's the ninth.
The ninth? But immediately they put seven in?
Right, because your Shloshim, it counts for seven even though it wasn't seven.
Oh.
Okay? Counts for seven even though it wasn't seven.
So the dead guy got less?
The dead guy got less. The live guy got less. Everybody got less.
This says Shloshim begins after the Shiva.
Shloshim begins after. It always begins. What do you mean Shloshim no. begins? Did you start counting after the Shiva? You don't start counting
Shloshim
after the
Shiva. Shloshim first begins after Shiva.
Not true.
No.
Not in terms of the counting. In terms of your saying yes that it's Shloshim. Correct. You're not in Shloshim till after that. The Shloshim is 30 days from the burial. Okay? Let's read this here. Maybe it's not clear. Maybe I'm not clear. But I think I'm not. In general, the mourning periods of Shiva and Shloshim are canceled whenever they are interrupted. Thus, if a festival interrupted Shiva, Shiva is canceled. That's correct. Likewise, if a festival interrupted Shloshim, Shloshim is canceled. Okay so far? Okay. Note, however, that a festival cancels Shiva only if Shiva had already commenced before the festival. That's correct. Read that again. Note that a festival cancels Shiva only if Shiva had already commenced before the festival. Likewise, it cancels Shloshim only if Shloshim, which follows Shiva, that's not, they're not careful with their language. That's not really exactly true. But what that means is the period, the rest of it, the whole thing is Shloshim. The 30th day is Shloshim, the 20th day is Shloshim. You call the whole thing Shloshim. That's
but
what it means.
You're saying the first 7 days of Shloshim are Shiva.
That's right. Correct.
Yeah, so it should be called Asrim v'Shlosh.
No,
but it's not. It's,
burial,
yeah, it's just kind of, the reference is always to the burial. So it means Shloshim from the burial. Shiva from the burial. Okay? That's all it means. So it kicks in after the Shiva.
Even though the first 7 days are in the Shiva.
Correct.
If a Moed comes, since you're saying you're not counting the Shloshim yet, the Moed would interrupt the Shiva, but then the Shloshim would begin following the Moed.
Say that again. Say that again.
If Shloshim and the Shiva both begin on the first day.
Correct.
After the burial.
Right, but the counting of Shloshim as a separate institution doesn't begin till after Shiva's over. Even though the numbers continue after Shiva. But the qualitative sense of the way the law changes, and it does change, it becomes less severe. You can go out, you can go back to work, you can do all those things. That's what we mean by Shloshim. All right, we'll call it Shloshim, even though it's only 23 days. It's only 23 days long. It fits into the larger picture because with reference to the burial, it's 30 days. It's a 30-day period. But this is the easy part. This is the part that's simple. You just wait. This is the easy thing. Okay, let's just finish up here. So to make be sure, note that a festival cancels Shiva only if Shiva had already commenced before the festival. Likewise, it cancels Shloshim only if Shloshim, which follows Shiva, or that part of Shloshim which follows Shiva, had already commenced before the festival. Okay, so in other words, if the festival comes and you haven't observed that part that comes after the Shiva, you'll still observe it. You'll
so
still
I
observe
have,
that.
If I haven't buried the person, I just
went. Well, that's different now.
At the point that the
Chag
starts,
then. That's different. We're talking about where you have done the burial before the holiday comes. Okay? Depends on how much before. If you did it one day before, okay, you have one day of Shiva. 2 days before, you have 2 days of Shiva. Shiva's canceled. Okay? Then comes the holiday. And then Shloshim is not canceled. Rather, that period of decreased observance begins after the holiday. How many days it is a consequence of a few things. In adding up the number of days, I'm telling you, that's not in the note here, but I'm telling you, Shiva is always 7, no matter how long it was. It's always considered in making the total 7. So you can have a situation, for example, the really complicated one is Sukkot. But you realize how these things get complicated because you have...
two chags.
you have... Let's say you did a burial before Sukkot. Okay? That counts as 7 days. Let's say you did a burial on Friday. Sukkot begins on a Saturday. Okay, so you already have 7 days. Sukkot cancels the Shiva. Right? But the 7 days of Sukkot counts as 7 days of the Shloshim. The 7 days of the Shloshim. Mm-hmm. So you have observed now 14 days, as it were in theory, yeah, even though you haven't. You haven't observed anything.
You haven't observed anything.
Correct. And you haven't observed any of the Shloshim. But nonetheless, those 7 days of Sukkot have counted in that count. So you've gotten rid of 14 days, and in fact, you've observed nothing. In effect.
Simchat Torah doesn't count as the Shloshim.
Simchat Torah counts as 7 days.
Why?
Because it's older.
It's a longer discussion. But I'm telling you how complicated this thing is. So exactly, and you haven't observed anything, and you've already observed 21 days.
Oh, but it doesn't cancel it?
Because you didn't do it. You didn't start yet.
You don't start.
Oh, you don't start it.
You can't start. You can start the count.
No, but you started the Shiva the first day. Then right. That means that you start the Shloshim too.
No. Because you cannot start Shloshim.
It's not part of the Shloshim.
You cannot start Shloshim until Shiva is over. Okay? You cannot start Shloshim until Shiva is over. And the logical, Ron is sensitive to the logical problem here. You would think that, what about, is there any leeway here? Let's say 5 seconds between, you know, is there a fraction of time when it's no longer Shiva, and maybe there's a little bit of time before it's Yom Tov? But there isn't. There isn't. Okay? There isn't, at least theoretically, there isn't. But we got certain situations where it's possible, and you'll see, where we're going to have a fraction of time that's going to throw the whole count crazy. All right? That's why I said this is the easy stuff. All right, let's keep reading here. Thus, for example, if the festival fell during Shiva, Shiva is canceled. So that we know. But Shloshim, which had not yet begun, since Shloshim first begins after Shiva, is not. A little bit of a strange English sentence, but so is the Gemara. These laws will be amplified more in the Mishnah below, and so the Gemara falls there. Although, as stated, Shloshim first begins after Shiva, the Gemara later, 19b, records a dispute between Abba Shaul and the sages regarding precisely when Shiva passes into Shloshim. This is what we were just getting at now. There's an argument later on about when Shiva passes into Shloshim. According to the sages, Shiva lasts for a full 7 days. Shloshim then follows, beginning with the night preceding the 8th day. That would seem logical, right? If you have Shiva at 7 days, goes 7 full days to the end of the 7th day, what then follows is the night, And that would then be the beginning of the Shloshim. Shloshim for beginning with an Ayin. Accordingly, excuse me, in order for Shloshim to have begun before the festival and thus be canceled by the festival, there must have been 8 days of mourning before the festival. You see that? We read that again. Accordingly, since Shloshim doesn't begin until after 7 full days, if the festival is going to cancel Shloshim, it means by definition you have to have had 8 days since the beginning, since the burial, including the burial, actually. Okay? It means you have to have a minimum of that. Accordingly, in order for Shloshim to have begun before the festival and thus be canceled by the festival, there must have been 8 days of mourning before the festival. Okay? I think that stands to reason. That's good. Because you have to have some Shloshim. If you can't have any Shloshim until 7 full days have gone by, right, and the next day is the 8th day, obviously I have to have had 8 days of mourning in order to have a mourning period cut off by the festival. Abba Shaul, however, maintains that part of a day is like the whole day. In other words, the observance of part of the 7th day of Shiva is sufficient to bring Shiva to a close. And Shloshim then begins on the very same day. Consequently, the festival will cancel Shloshim even if there are only 7 days of mourning period to the festival, prior to the festival. Let me explain to you what this means. This, in fact, is what the law is.
Yeah, but I think because we count the day the night before.
No, it's not it. That's not the reason. Let's say here, let's take an example. We're Orzarua, now we have a congregant who's sitting Shiva, okay? Congregant is sitting Shiva, and well, it's a little bit different because it ends on Shabbat. The burial was on Sunday, okay? When is the Shiva over? Okay? Shiva over the end of Shabbat?
Saturday night.
That's what
Friday
you would
night.
Think logically.
But it's Friday night.
Well, no, we will count the Shabbat. We'll count the Shabbat because there are things that there are observances that you have to observe on the Shabbat anyway, even though they're not public. They're private observances. The prohibition against sexual relations, for example, continues on the Sabbath because it's a private thing. Public forms of mourning do not continue on the Sabbath, okay? But private forms do. So the question is, when is this Shiva over? Is it over Motzei Shabbat, at the end of Shabbat? Because that would be seven days.
No, it's over on Sunday night. But you
would say Sunday night? Why would it be Sunday night?
If you start to sit Shiva
on Sunday, right?
It's 7 days. So you
So you're counting 24-hour days. Let's say the burial was at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Sunday.
2 o'clock, generally.
I'll tell you why I want 4.
Let me read something.
Yeah.
A friends are describing Ben Bernanke. He's the new...
What does this have to do with...
He talks in the Talmudic style, and then the internet analyzes it. The study of Jewish law that analyzes every word in great detail.
You think that's true?
I don't know. Sounds that way.
Sounds that way. Okay. All right. So here we get it. We have a 7-day period. There are a variety of ways you could count 7 days. Right? One of the things that we would be tempted to do would be to count 7 24-hour days. Right? Now, which is to say, but they had this concept. It's called in Hebrew me'et le'et. Me'et le'et. Me'et le'et means 24-hour periods. 24-hour periods. So let's say I said theoretically somebody, these days, for example, sundown is around 5:30. So let's say you buried somebody at 4:30 in the afternoon. 4:30 Sunday afternoon. Let's do it another day because we won't have the Sabbath issue. It'll be easier. Let's do this on a Monday. We had burial on a Monday at 4:30 on a Monday afternoon. Okay? That's the beginning of Shiva. You could count that day number one extends till 4:30 on Tuesday afternoon, 4:30 on Wednesday afternoon, and so on. First of all, that whole system is not appropriate for Shiva. If you have any time in a day, any hour in a day for Shiva, then you've observed the whole day of Shiva. Shiva is a day, not of your hours, not of 24 hours, but a day which is everybody else's day, namely, beginning at the night and continuing on through the day. So if you have, at 4:30, you have buried somebody, okay?
So that's the first day.
So your first day is to 5:30.
Your first day extends till 5:30. It's 1 hour, but it's called one day. Okay, it's 1 hour, but it's called one day. Okay? So that's the first day. Even though it was an hour, it's a day. So that was, when did we have this burial? We had a Monday, okay? So Monday was day one. Tuesday's day two. Wednesday's day three. Thursday's day four. Friday's day five. Saturday's day six.
No, you can't say Shiva on Saturday.
You must count Saturday as day six. It's counted as day six. And that is how the Shabbat is different from a Yom Tov. You realize that if a Shabbat were like a Yom Tov, it would cut the Shiva every week.
Mm-hmm. So that would always happen.
You could never have 7 days of Shiva. You could never have 7 days of Shiva. Therefore, the Shabbat is qualitatively completely different from the Yom Tov as far as the laws of Shiva go. Okay? So we started and we got up to the seventh day. We did our burial at 4:30 on Monday. The seventh day was on Sunday. Okay? Now, you might, my question to you is, when on Sunday does it end?
5:30.
Okay.
In the morning.
The rabbis say, according to what our note says, the Rabbanan say in the Mishnah, that it goes until 5:30.
Sunset.
Goes to the sunset. Till the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
But another rabbi said that part of,
but that's not what we do. Rather, we follow the law according to Abishol. And the law is that instead we observe Miktzat Hayom Kechulo. A part of the day is as if it is the whole day. We observe 1 hour of Shiva in the morning of a day, and that is an entire day. Okay? Now, we know what the law eventually is, and we will get in the Gemara to the discussion of that law, so I don't want to deal with that exhaustively now. It has relevance, however, because of the problem that we're setting up. If we say that in order for the regel to cut off shloshim, according to the rabbis, you would need 8 days of mourning, right? Because you'd need at least 1 day of shloshim. Right? You have to have some shloshim in order for the regel to cancel it. You've already had 7 days.
Tacked on to the morning that we sat the 1 hour.
Wait, that's Abishol, that's not the rabbis.
Excuse me.
Okay, the rabbis say you have to, a day of Shiva is a whole day. Goes until sunset.
Right.
Goes until sunset. All right? So for them, you need 8 full days. The alternative opinion, though, okay, Abishol's opinion, which is that the seventh day ends in the morning, means that the first day of Shloshim actually is the seventh day. All right, the first day of Shloshim is the seventh day of mourning. So you get 2 for 1. That's correct. That's correct.
What does that mean? Shloshim is 29?
That's an interesting question. Mm. I'll have to wonder
30,
about that.
But it's just an overlap.
Okay.
It's an overlap.
So
it's
a So that first day is the last day of Shiva and the first day of Shloshim.
Correct. And it could be that the next day is also the first day of Shloshim.
Why?
It depends how you observe it.
Because,
Because
it may have an overlapping time on the seventh day, but it doesn't mean that the eighth day still isn't the first day. The first day may extend backwards because it's sharing some of the first day. It may be a theoretical thing, but it has significance in terms of the Chag, when the Yom Tov comes. Okay? Because if, in fact, you have theoretically observed some of the Shloshim, even if it's a spillover piece of shloshim from day one to the day before it, then in theory the chag cancels it.
If you from 10 a.m. to 5:30.
Correct, exactly. From 10 a.m. to 5:30, exactly.
Chag begins at 5:30.
Correct, and then there's no more shloshim. But according to the rabbis, right, you would never have observed any shloshim. Because the rabbis don't agree with Abba Shaul. The rabbis say that there is a full 7 days, and the shloshim begins only after the completion of the full 7 days. You need 8 days of mourning in order for the chag to be able to cancel it. Okay?
But the chag won't cancel unless shloshim has started.
Correct.
And it wouldn't have started.
Correct. In that case, shloshim, according to the rabbis, in that case, the shloshim would not be canceled. According to Abba Shaul, it would be canceled.
So his logic prevailed partway.
I don't know what's logical.
Well, the fact that his argument that it be, you only have observing Shiva for part of a day counts for the whole day, he won that part of it, but it doesn't count for the other issue, was when does Shloshim begin for purposes of...
Well, it counts for part of it because, remember, Shloshim does begin, as far as he's concerned, as you said, on 10 o'clock in the morning. Okay, even though it may be a long day one, the day one may be almost 2 days or a day and a half, still it does begin. And because it's begun, if the Yom Tov comes, it cancels the whole rest of it.
So that is the law. That would be the law according to Shaul.
And that's the law according to Abba Shaul, correct.
But that was not accepted.
No, that happens to be the law.
Oh.
Happens to be the law.
So then,
happens to be
so
the law.
It's linen.
Yes, the law in the laws of mourning, wherever there's a dispute, it's always decided to the lenient point of view. Whatever is less burdensome on people is where the law is.
But for counting the 30, assuming there's no chag, it's sort of like an extra long first
correct,
day.
Correct. But that same principle happens to apply, though, to the 30th day.
10 o'clock. 30,
so
correct. So the last day of Shloshim is also an hour long. Because that's the principle that's applied to the whole system then.
Why do you use the beginning of the day as the morning rather than the evening here? Because usually, I thought the Jewish day starts in the evening.
Correct. That's also a problem. That's complicated. You're right.
On the question of the Shiva being interrupted,
mm-hmm.
if you didn't have an opportunity. Since the Shiva, if it's interrupted by the Chag, it's only interrupted when the Chag begins. In principle, you could never have an opportunity to cut your hair before the Chag if you were an Aver. So...
Correct. Right? Correct, that's right. And we could say that you just should not cut until after the Chag was over. Okay, but here...
You're arguing about it, well, even if you had an opportunity or not, in this case, you wouldn't have had the opportunity.
Before, correct. Here, that's no question you wouldn't have the opportunity to do it before. Okay? Because this whole setup is a setup for one of these thought questions. You can see already this is basically a thought question. And then it will eventually have ramifications in a variety of ways once you set up this theoretical thought question.
I'm not quite clear. If you're on the 15th day of Shiva, and also Shono comes,
15th day of mourning. 15 days
I'm sorry,
of mourning.
Of
Shloshim?
Shloshim.
Okay.
Yes.
Right?
And also Shono comes, which
right.
is 2 days.
Correct.
What happens after the 2 days?
There's nothing left. You're finished.
It's canceled. Finished.
Finished. The first minute that it is Rosh Hashanah, the whole thing is over.
Thank you.
No more Shloshim.
Is that only applied to Rosh Hashanah?
It's applied to Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Pesach and Shavuot, to all of the
festivals.
Biblical festivals. It does not apply to Hanukkah,
Purim,
Tisha B'Av, none of those things.
My father died, but didn't we get interrupted by Tisha B'Av? Oh, no, maybe Tisha B'Av was over.
Tisha B'Av would not cancel anything. There are laws of Tisha B'Av for mourners. It becomes an issue when you're a mourner, because the question you're supposed to go to the synagogue to hear the reading of the Megillah Egha. So that the question.
I think the seventh day would fell on Tisha B'Av, and
so the seventh day. Seventh day mean at night. It's the seventh day.
So what are you carrying?
But he's right.
But you probably would have gone to shul, because Tisha B'Av is unusual, since Tisha B'Av is the mood of mourning. You can go. Right.
Part of the 7 days is because the soul of the dead is in between. I mean, if I understand it correctly from the past, it's not here, not there.
Well, but you want to make a question?
Yeah, the question. Is, wait. The question is, why nobody is advocating for the soul? Where is the?
Oh. Well, it's actually a worse situation than that, because the soul's not mentioned here at all.
There's
no mention whatsoever of any theological background to any of these ideas. No mention whatsoever. So whether that's relevant or not, I'm not sure. Because you could flip it over. And I think that as far as the laws of Shiva go, it's clear that the focus of the laws of Shiva are really not on the deceased, but they're on the mourner. They're really on the mourner. So it's the mourner that is the focus here and not the deceased. If later on we say that, well, in the soul, life of the soul and so on, maybe there's a connection. But I think that the assumption behind this is that we're dealing with the emotions, the feeling, it's more than feelings, just some of the deep psychology of the mourner.
Yeah, but the whole process of Shiva and saying Kaddish is to help the soul get...
Not Shiva. I don't think that's true for Shiva. Kaddish, yes. They realize that in the Talmud, they don't know anything about Kaddish. There's no mourner's Kaddish in the Talmud. It's almost 1,000 years later that they started saying Kaddish. It's a long time. Okay, so there's nothing about
Kaddish.
There
was a complete development since the Talmud time about our relation.
I wouldn't say complete, but there's been a lot of development. A lot goes on. We're a developing religion, believe it or not.
Slow.
Yeah, slow, but we are developing.
So if it was 1,000 years later, why in Aramaic?
That's another question.
Okay. They didn't want to do it in Polish.
Okay. The Kaddish already existed in the ancient world.
Yeah,
but it was not used.
But it wasn't used for this purpose. Okay, that's the short answer. Let's back in the note. I still want to complete this note. All of this is taking off from the note. I told you this is a good note. I spent a whole night on one footnote. Abba Shaul. I'm on 17b2. Abba Shaul, however, maintains that part of a day is like the whole day. In other words, the observance of part of the seventh day of Shiva is sufficient to bring Shiva to a close, and Shloshim then begins on the very same day. Consequently, the festival will cancel Shloshim, even if there are only 7 days of mourning prior to the festival. One of the restrictions of Shloshim is the prohibition of cutting hair. Where the festival cancels Shloshim, the prohibition of Shloshim is likewise cancelled. Furthermore, in such a case, the mourner may cut his hair on the festival eve in honor of the approaching festival. Okay? This is all the law. This is correct. Okay? This is still what we observe. So if you need this background for the discussion that's now going to ensue in the Gemara. Okay? Now I'm going back a page to 17b1.
Actually, in the Shlosh, this would mean on the seventh day of mourning, the Shiva has ended in the morning.
According to Abba Shaul. Right.
You're in the Shloshim, when you wouldn't be able to cut your hair, but they're saying you can cut your hair.
Correct. Because the Yom Tov will cancel it, and we are giving you an extra period of leniency for the sake of the Yom Tov. Right, in theory. But of course, if you didn't have that, or if you didn't do it, even though we're giving you that leniency, one of the things that we learned from the Baraita is that if it comes to be Chol HaMoed, you can't cut your hair. Okay?
Because you forgot to do it on the eve before the
film. Right, correct. Correct. Okay. So, well, that's what we're going to clarify now, in fact. All right. Now, step back a page. So let's step back a page. Yes, ma'am.
If they had Kaddish in the ancient world, they didn't have it?
They didn't have it for mourners.
What did they have Kaddish for?
They had it when you would finish a lecture. Rabbi would finish the lecture. Somebody would then say Kaddish, which was a formal praise of God at the end of a lecture. In all likelihood, what we call the Rabbanan Kaddish is probably the oldest form of the Kaddish, because that's the way it was used. It was used probably also as a separation, the way we have it in our prayer service. In a Jewish prayer service, realize we recite Kaddish many times. And it's always to separate between one part of a service and another. Or at the end of the service, before Aleinu, is the Kaddish Aleim. The Kaddish Aleim has a paragraph of Titkabel in it, which is a paragraph added to ask, it's a request that our prayers were accepted, are accepted. So those Kaddishes are very old. I don't know exactly how old they are. We don't know exactly how old they are, but they're quite old. The use of the Kaddish for mourners, we know, is much more recent. That doesn't begin until around the 13th century or so.
Didn't want to make your life difficult.
Okay.
How did it make the transition to mourning?
It's Jewish history. Jewish history has a big effect on a lot of things that otherwise wouldn't happen. That was the Crusades. Mm-hmm. It was the impact of the Crusades on the community, which was just so devastating. It was devastating public mourning, that a variety of things began to happen in the structure of our services, and that we focused on death, publicly.
Kaddish Rabbanan?
Kaddish Rabbanan, I think, is at the end of a lecture. It's together the conclusion of a lecture.
Okay. I want to go back to the coin that Alal Mishmar.
Okay.
If a coin that knows that he goes to serve, he knows it many, many, many months before the date, right?
Maybe yes, maybe no.
Would they call him like on the spot?
Could be, because we know ahead of time the area of the country that will come. That's pretty set out. But the reality is, you know, it's like business. You know who's going to do a job, and then when you actually get to do the job, only then do you really know who's going to do a job. After the fact, you know a lot. Before the fact, you think you know a lot. And then, you know, you're going to staff it in a certain way. You staff it, you're going to do it this way. Comes down to it. Somebody got sick and somebody else didn't want to go, and somebody's in mourning, and somebody's got a wife who's pregnant and says, no, I can't go. Come on, you have no rachmanis for me. You know, and got to deal with it.
The question was if they know the schedule. I mean, the guy could do
Seven days
earlier, and he can be okay.
And then he would be a mess. Because still, how much at a time are you going to cut your hair? You know, your hair is not going to stop. If you have hair, it's going to keep growing. Okay.
That is the starting point, Ron.
Okay. Now, let's see if we can get into this next piece here.
Didn't Mara say earlier that the Cohen was in the Mishmar cannot cut his hair in?
During the Mishmar.
Yeah.
During the Mishmar, correct.
Well, this is during the Yom Tov.
Okay, and if the Mishmar ends during the Chol HaMoed, then he can cut his hair during Chol HaMoed.
Okay.
All right, good. So we're on 17, I'm going back to 17b1.
That's when they
were on GDM. Last paragraph. Okay. Here the English introduction is helpful. The Gemara proceeds to clarify the meaning of the Baraita and also to establish why our Mishnah made no mention of these cases. Gemara first addresses the case of a mourner. Okay, this is now we got the background. Let's see where we go with this. Hay avel hechidame. When we say that an avel, someone who is in mourning, who completes his mourning during the period of the Yom Tov, hechidame, what do we mean? What are the facts of this case? What is it like? All right. If we mean that the guy's eighth day, the eighth day of mourning, falls on the eve of the festival, okay? If that's the case, the guy should have been able to cut his hair before the regel. Before the regel. Right, let's say, you're not allowed to cut your hair until Shloshim is over, right? That's the general principle. Can't cut your hair until Shloshim is over. Right? Let's say the regel comes at the end of the eighth day of your mourning. Okay? So when the regel comes, you're going to cut off the mourning. You're going to cut off the shloshim. Shloshim is going to be over. So we know you get a little bit of a grace period. That's the assumption here. You're going to get a little bit of a grace period. And the guy's got that option. Okay? He's got that option. So he, in theory, had a time when he could have cut his hair before the regel. There was a time he could have cut his hair before the regel. If there was a time that he could have cut his hair before the regel, why do we say that he can cut his hair on Chol HaMoed? The other cases where we say that you can cut your hair on Chol HaMoed are all cases where a guy didn't have the opportunity to cut his hair before the regel. This case, he actually did have the opportunity to cut his hair before the regel because he had 8 days of mourning before the regel. Okay? So, the first theoretical possibility that we raised here about what do we mean when we say that the mourner is allowed to cut his hair during the regel, we have to keep in mind that could this be talking about a case of the eighth day? Couldn't be talking about that case. Eighth day, the guy has got it. He has an opportunity to do it before. Therefore, we shouldn't allow him to cut it on the regal. So far, so good.
Yes.
Okay. Now, get another possibility. Ela shachal shmini shelo liyot b'shabbat erev regal. And I told you that was the easy stuff. Hold on to your seats. But here, now is another possibility. That possibility, I just said to you, get a little bit of a grace period. When is the little bit of a grace period? Right before the regal, right?
Which is a regular day, on a regular weekday.
On a regular weekday. What if the regal starts Saturday night? Oh-ho. Okay. If the regal starts Saturday night, then the little bit of the grace period would be on Shabbos. And can you cut your hair on Shabbos?
No.
No. So maybe that's what we're talking about. The guy who's in that position, he could cut his hair on Chol HaMoed. Maybe that's what we're talking about. All right, so the Gemara says, Ibai le'legaluche erev Shabbos. No, that guy should have cut his hair before Shabbat. Because we would also give a certain dispensation before Shabbat. Okay? The Amar Rav Chista, as we have here a Baraita, Rav Chista said, the Ravina Amar Bar Shila, Halacha Ka'aba Sha'ul. He says, Rav Chista says, the Halacha follows the law of Abba Sha'ul. Remember, Abba Sha'ul was a part of a day and not a whole day. Right? The last day of Shiva is part of a day and not a whole day. Halacha Ka'aba Sha'ul. Umodim Chachamim. And the sages agree la'Abba Sha'ul with Abba Sha'ul. When? B'shachal Shmini Shalol Yot B'Shabbat Erev HaRegel. In the case where the eighth day falls on Shabbat, which is the eve of a festival, shumutar legalech be'erev Shabbat, that this man is allowed to cut his hair on the eve of Shabbat. Okay? So, they're right. So we see that the rabbis actually deal with this situation.
Basically, that is on the seventh day of the...
Well, they agree. The rabbis agree with Abba Shaul in that case. And only in that case. Right? They're willing to agree in that one case because they want to give this guy a little extra dispensation so he can cut his hair before the beginning of the regal. Well, if he can cut his hair before the beginning of the regal, do you think we should allow him to cut his hair on Chol HaMoed? Never.
Not if we're consistent.
No way. We don't want that to happen. All right, to find out what the real situation is, you must come back next week.
Why does Minyan Seres count as 7 days?
Because, according to the Talmud, Shmini Atzeret Chag Bifnei Atzmo is considered to be not a part of Sukkot, but is its own festival.
But 7 days?
How do we define the difference between it then being 1 day and something greater than 1 day? In fact, it counts as 7 days. In order to pump it up and show that it's a whole holiday by itself, it has its own sacrifices, it's a unique holiday. Okay?
And we have a question from the morning tonight. From what's the derivation of covering the mirrors?
Very interesting question. About that, you will see nothing in the Talmud. There's absolutely nothing in the Talmud on that subject.
There's a rumor that it had to be goats.
It's possible. It's possible. The reason given today is that it is one of a variety of practices that are followed in order to discourage concern with one's own image and taking care of yourself. That when you mourn, you don't cut your hair, you don't shower, you don't change, you wash your clothes. All of that is neglect of the self. And we, of course, are not like that. We want to look good. We want to present ourselves nicely. So here we don't look in the mirror. We cover the mirrors. We cover all of that. Okay? And that is all part of a general approach to not be worried about the way we appear. Okay? Now, having told you that, I'll now tell you something else. For a very long time, there were very frum people who were very careful to make sure that they never covered the mirrors. As I said, they didn't cover the mirrors. And because it was felt that covering mirrors was basically a superstition, to keep away the spirits, to keep away spirits, that mirrors and spirits were connected with each other. And so I have known people who made it a point, dafka, not to cover the mirrors, because that was a way of stating that some customs are superstition and we do not believe in superstition. Very frum people who in fact did not cover their mirrors. Today, I don't think I know anybody who will do that anymore. Because what has happened, and I would say this has happened over the last 30 years, it's only 25 to 30 years, that universally in the Jewish community, at least in the States, I have not observed. I went to one Sheva Minyan in Israel. I've only been to one, so I really can't report on what the Israelis do. But I can tell you that here, in the last many years, I have never seen anybody not cover the mirrors.
But you're right, not when I was a child.
No, when you were a child, it would have been different. You were into the Jewish center. I'm sure that's in the right, Jewish center, there are a lot of people who would not do it. You would not do it. It was not customary years ago. And it has come to be customary, as, and I understand the psychology almost of it.
My grandparents died, for example, as Rabbi Young was the Jewish center, we did not.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was shocked then, later, when I was more engaged as an adult, because I was a teenager.
Uh-huh.
And suddenly everybody was doing it.
Correct.
And
it's become a recent, fairly, I mean, as far as these things go, when we talk 2,000 years, 30 years in a 2,000 year period is a small amount of time. But I'd say it's, at least in the American Jewish community, is universal among people who are observant. And the reason that you will hear is the first reason that I gave you, not the second reason. That was the reason that it was objected to 30 and more years ago.
We should stop covering the mirrors and start overturning the beds.
You just wait, Ben. Yeah. You guys go.